moving right the way across the UK. Maybe a damp start in the southeast of England on Saturday. Otherwise, the weekend sees most of the rain in the northern half of Scotland. For all of us, though, it will feel somewhat cooler, certainly fresher, especially in the north, where we'll have some strong winds. But many places, Steve, will be dry with some sunshine.
That'll be autumn coming in then, will it? Thank you very much, Darren. Now on BBC Radio 4, our book of the week, Nielsen, The Life of a Singer-Songwriter by Alan Shipton. Having penned a number one hit for the Monkees, Harry Nielsen has made enough money to leave the bank and concentrate on music. Everybody's Talkin', although not written by him, has become a hit when it's used on the soundtrack of the film Midnight Cowboy, and he would soon release his most famous album, Nielsen Schmilsen. Meanwhile, he's formed a close relationship with John Lennon and has a new woman in his life, Diane Clatworthy. But there are wild times ahead. Kerry Shale is the reader.
Sleep late, my lady friend.
Nielsen and Diane set up home together in the Hollywood Hills. Her memory of Nielsen from this period was of a man who was slender, blonde, with a charming smile, athletic, trim, slim, cheerful, and fun to be around. But when he drank, he could get very dark and scary. The house was close to where Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees and his British wife, Samantha Just, had their home. Nielsen and Dolenz had become close friends, and by late 1968, they were in and out of each other's houses all the time. Samantha Just threw sophisticated parties at which Laurel Canyon neighbors such as Alice Cooper, Timothy Leary, and Jim Morrison mingled with the likes of Jeff Bridges, Jack Nicholson, and Brian Wilson. Samantha and Diane remained close friends, not least because this was when the Monkees were gradually falling apart. The July 1968 recording sessions for the album Harry marked the last time that Nielsen and the Monkees were both working simultaneously at RCA Studios. On December 31, 1969, Diane and Nielsen traveled together to Las Vegas to tie the knot. She described him at the start of their marriage as a family man. He was more interested in doing things together. He didn't drink as much. He did do drugs sometimes, but it was tolerable. Samantha Just recalls Diane keeping the house running smoothly, despite an erratic pattern of visitors, some of them crazy, drunk, or stoned. Equally, she remembers Nielsen enjoying quiet after-dinner conversations and old-fashioned parlor games. When he was not at home, Nielsen was in demand on the party circuit in Los Angeles. In early 1970, he was invited to a party where he was introduced to another young songwriter, Jimmy Webb. The friendship with Webb lasted all of Nielsen's life. 1970 was to be the year in which Nielsen created one of the most enduring parts of his legacy, his animated feature, The Point. By now, Nielsen was beginning to try out various narcotics. Now that the Monkees had effectively broken up, Mickey Dolenz was at home a lot, and Samantha Just not only remembers Nielsen bringing mounds of cocaine, but also enthusiastically consuming LSD, whiskey, cognac, and anything else on offer. The inspiration for the storyline of The Point came to Nielsen when he was high on LSD. His vision was of a completely pointed world, because the drug enhanced every spiky visual detail of trees, leaves, rocks, faces, and houses. I just realized it was the world's longest pun. And I realized, God, point of sale, point of view, point of, and all those things.
Me and my arrow.
The hero was Oblio, born with a round head into the pointed village to pointy-headed parents in a society where everyone and everything had a point. It is a charming, whimsical morality tale. Getting the idea sold to a television company, however, was not straightforward. Nielsen might be a million-selling pop artist, but Marty Starger, the commissioning editor at ABC, canceled every meeting that was set up to discuss the project. When Starger canceled for a third time in a row because he had been called to New York, Nielsen saw red. He called every airline flying to New York, saying that he was confirming Mr. Starger's flight. When one of them responded positively, he reserved the seat next to Starger and set off hot foot for the airport. As he queued to board, Starger was talking to a Paramount executive whom Nielsen had met, and they were introduced. Nielsen said, "I'm Harry Nielsen. You've canceled out of 3 meetings. You sure are a hard guy to get to know." Within a couple of weeks, ABC made a formal offer to screen The Point. As well as agreeing that Fred Wolfe would be the animator of the film, Nielsen needed a narrator. He recalled, "I went to Dustin Hoffman and asked if he'd narrate it for nothing, and at the time he was getting $1 million a movie, right? And he said yes." The Point was the first ever full-length animation made specifically for television's Sunday Movie of the Week. When it came out, the press and public loved it. Rock magazine said, "Throughout the fairy tale, the delicate, syncopated, and fluid songs continually transcended their context. They were beautiful in a way that very few popular tunes are."
Little fella, you're so tired, you can hardly lift your head, but you wanna hear a story before you go to bed.
The year 1971 began with the birth of Nielsen and Diane's son, Zach. Diane Nielsen recalled that part of Harry wanted to be a parent, part of him wanted to be a partner and married, but most of him didn't want to be.
Little cowboy, put your saddle in the barn.
Nielsen watched the child closely in the first days of his life, marveling at him. He wrote him a letter. "Dear Zach, I stood over you and watched you sleep this morning. Someday you will know how I feel as I write these words. You are beautiful. You moved your feet and toes proportionally to the noise I made. I love you. Big Daddy Schmilson." For his next album of completely fresh material, Nielsen decided to work with a new producer, Richard Perry. Both men were immense Beatles fans, and Perry believed that Nielsen had the promise to be his Beatle. Perry said that he knew that Harry had the vocal ability, as well as the songwriting ability, to do something that could take him to another level. But Perry also knew the one thing he had to do was to make the album in the UK. Trident Studios in Soho were booked for a number of successive sessions in June. The majority of them were to run from 7 in the evening until 2 a.m. Nielsen's use of cocaine had, according to Diane, increased. Now, as well as the pills and the hard drugs, he was introduced to the alcohol-fueled lifestyle of the London music scene. It was an eye-opener for Diane Nielsen.
"The musicians over there could drink Harry under the table."
And Samantha Just saw a change in Nielsen when he returned.
"Harry was destructive to himself, and he knew it."
Nielsen had not been back in America for long when a call came from a producer of Top of the Pops, Stanley Dorfman, about making a television special for the BBC. Nielsen demurred, saying that he did not want to do a live performance for the BBC or anyone else.
"But Stanley said we could do the first in concert without an audience." That I found appealing.
The in-concert series was taped at the Television Theater in Shepherd's Bush. Stanley Dorfman manufactured an audience by taking clips filmed there for other shows and cutting them in. Between his songs, Nielsen did suitable bows and acknowledgments. The music of Harry Nielsen edition of In Concert was broadcast by the BBC on January 1, 1972. It, and a later film, also made by Dorfman, remain the only extended portraits of Nielsen actually performing, and this first show suggests that he would have been a very effective live performer had he chosen to follow that route. Indeed, Stanley Dorfman recalls that during the time Nielsen was in London, he was very happy to be the warm-up man for live music programs such as Top of the Pops. He would come on, sing songs, tell gags, do his Stan Laurel impression, and work the audience into a good mood, just as long as he was never required to do the same thing in front of the cameras. By the time Nielsen In Concert was shown, his latest album had been released for almost 3 months. "Without You" was Nielsen's first number one hit. can't forget this evening. Meanwhile, Diane Nielsen watched the gradual alteration in his personality. The more successful he became, the more he drank. And when Nielsen Schmielsen became his biggest hit, he had everything he wanted. He just went really downhill then. By 1972, he was a snarly, angry person. By the time they returned to London in March 1972 to record Son of Schmielsen, Nielsen was drinking a bottle of brandy a day. Soon, he was preferring to hang out after the sessions and drink with the musicians rather than being with his family. After the recordings were done, Diane packed her bags and took Zach back to Los Angeles, leaving Nielsen for good. Instead of modifying his behavior in London, he carried on drinking and taking whatever drugs came his way. One friendship which blossomed in the latter half of 1972 was with the drummer credited on Son of Schmielsen as Richie Snare, better known as Ringo Starr.
"Ringo and I spent 1,000 hours laughing," said Nielsen.
Ringo, often sporting mirror sunglasses that disguised the effects of the night before, was at the heart of a social set who enjoyed late nights, exclusive bars, nightclubs, and brandy. Along with Nielsen and Ringo, there would be Mark Bolan of T-Rex, The Who's drummer, Keith Moon, and Graham Chapman of Monty Python's Flying Circus. They would frequently meet in the afternoon, drinking brandy and swapping yarns. Nielsen recalled,
"We would drink until 9 p.m., that's 6 hours of brandy, and then between 9 and 10, we would usually end up at Tramp, having total blowouts almost every night."
Nielsen decided to purchase the lease of an apartment of his own in London that summer, in a tall 18th-century house at 9 Curzon Place, on the southern fringes of Mayfair. It was in need of a makeover, and he discussed this with Ringo, who had recently set up a design partnership with the sculptor and furniture maker Robin Cruikshank. While the apartment was getting its makeover, Nielsen got involved in a project with Ringo to make a movie, Son of Dracula, which was no doubt much more fun to make than it is to see. The film was deemed so bad by British distributors that it was not released in England at all. Nielsen took no fee for appearing in the movie, but in exchange for playing the lead role, Ringo paid for him to have cosmetic dentistry to straighten his front teeth. Some of Nielsen's closest friends believed that self-consciousness about his crooked teeth had been a significant factor in his decision not to appear in live concerts. Richard Perry, Nielsen's producer, was not happy with Nielsen's next idea, that he should make an album of American standards. The more Perry tried to persuade him to do something new and original, the more Nielsen clung to the idea of exploring the great American songbook. In the end, Perry wished him luck and walked away from being his producer. Nielsen knew his voice was still in perfect condition to record a collection of standard songs, but that his increasingly hedonistic lifestyle might mean that time was running out to demonstrate just how well he could sing this material. Looking back on it in 1988, Nielsen said,
"The choir boy thing was gone. I knew it then. That incredible, flexible, rubber band-like voice? I barely just snuck in that album under the gun." Waiting to find a little bluebird in vain.
Kerry Shale was reading from Nielsen, The Life of a Singer-Songwriter by Alan Shipton. It's abridged by Libby Spurrier, produced by Joanna Green. It's a peer production for BBC Radio 4 and continues tomorrow at the same time. Thank you. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Thursday the 29th of August. There is a warning of gales in Fitzroy. The general synopsis at 1800, low, Iberia, 1010, slow moving, filling 1014 by 1800 Thursday. Low, northwest Bailey, 1004, moving slowly northeast, losing its identity. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, north Utsira, variable 4 becoming southeasterly 5 for a time. Rain or showers, good, occasionally poor. South Utsira, westerly or northwesterly, backing southeasterly for a time, 4 or 5, occasionally 6 at first in far southeast. Showers, good, occasionally moderate. 40s, Cromarty, 4th, Tyne, Dogger. South or southwest, 4 or 5, occasionally 6 in 40s and Cromarty. Showers, moderate.